coming up on this episode of the Baby Makers Podcast.
In the beginning, I would drop off the food and ring the door and, you know, run. And sometimes, you know, I would actually hand off the food to the mom who would open the door. And once in a while, she would ask me to come in. And I would go in and sit with her. And again, she's there by herself. And I could literally sense a difference of just having a little presence in her space. And again, the loneliness that occurs.
Hi, I'm Dr. Danica Thornberry, a holistic expert in the fertility space. And I want to welcome you to the Baby Makers Podcast, a series of conversations I'm having with the Los Angeles fertility community. I'll be interviewing leading doctors, celebrities, holistic providers, and some of our most inspiring patients. Together, we'll share empowering reframes and insights you can really lean into when you're on a fertility journey. So grab your favorite beverage, journal, and a pen, because these unique strategies and uplifting perspectives can restore your fertile confidence and your sense of hope in an often challenging process. Today's episode is brought to you by Well People Integrative Healing, a holistic healing collective located here in West LA. Holistic healing addresses your mind, body, and spirit, creating positive changes to your health that may not happen through conventional medicine alone. Well People offers a comprehensive range of holistic services, all designed to help you experience optimal health and well-being. At Well People, there's a community of practitioners with training in acupuncture, psychology, functional medicine, energy healing, hypnotherapy, hormone balance, and body work. Using a whole body medicine, individualized medicine approach, the holistic specialist at Well People will guide you on your journey to wholeness. Even if you're not in the Los Angeles area, you can still benefit from their expertise. Well People offers virtual consultations and telemedicine so you can access their holistic healing solutions from the comfort of your own home. So if you're ready to optimize your physical, mental, and emotional well-being, visit wellpeoplehealing.com. That's WELLPEOPLEHEALING.com. Schedule your appointment today and take your next step towards a happier, more balanced life. Han Oh is the founder of Mother Bees and the author of The First 40 Days, Awakening Fertility, and 9 Golden Months. As a mom of three and a former doula, Han now serves the community of postpartum women here in LA. During the quarantine, she released Awakening Fertility, and it's a compilation of powerful insights collected from her ancestors and those she terms the wise ones. She wanted to help readers identify the stirrings of their future children as they prepare for conception and motherhood. This episode will remind you of your own hidden feminine power that may have been lost along the way. So now, here's my episode with Han Oh. Han, I'm so glad that you're here. We have so much to talk about. I'm just going to jump right in to your books.
Yeah, here they are.
Yes, here they are. The first 40 days, when you wrote that, did you have any idea that you would be going into fertility?
No idea. I actually didn't even know the first 40 days was going to grow and organically evolve throughout
the years. As well as it did.
As well as
it has, and into Mother Bees, your company.
And it continues to. Yeah. So postpartum was obviously my baby, my love, but I've always had an inkling for fertility. I've always had a knowing.
Yeah.
And I've always known that fertility was going to happen. The book Awakening Fertility was going to be birthed at some point.
Because it was so alive in you, and you're such a creative artist who found her way into doula land. And that's how the first 40 days came through. Can you give us a little bit of information about the book and the idea?
The first 40 days came about after my third birth, right? So my first birth, I had care for my aunt, who, as you know, they're all acupuncturists, right? Two aunts and an uncle, all acupuncturists. I come from a line of family members who are healers and herbalists. And I've always known about postpartum care, right? 坐月子. So my first birth, my aunt came down and took care of us and really cooked and nurtured. And she did everything that I had always learned about as a child. And the second birth came around, and I thought, you know what? I could just do this on my own. And I went right into my
office. I'm going to be my own postpartum doula.
I'm going to be everything on my own because I did it the first time and I could just wing it. And I went right to work pretty much the second day after I gave birth at home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just like went from my bedroom over to the garage to start working again. That's where our home office was. So I just strapped a baby on and went straight to work. And by the time we had our third baby, that's when things start to crumble physically. And also I got sick. I got, you know, bad sinus infection. And then the birth came, and then I had postpartum depression. So I can tell because I had three babies within 5 years, right?
That's
so that was, that's a lot, right? Because we want at least 2 to 3 years between mm-hmm. babies.
It didn't give your body much time to recover.
Not at all. Not at all. After my third birth, I just knew something was missing here in society. Obviously here in Los Angeles and in America, because in other cultures, we just know that this is the way of life.
Yeah. And if you had missed it and you knew and grew up watching it, then you knew everybody else was missing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know it so well. I know the cuisine. I know what to do. I knew everything, but it's one of those things.
The standard American diet, sad, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was this opportunity for you to educate and inform, and you went for it, thankfully.
I did. I did. I knocked on my co-author's door a few times. I said, you know, let's write a book about postpartum. And she just said, no, it's not trendy. It's not sexy enough.
And it wasn't anything anybody knew about over here.
No, that's true. Because the word postpartum is not, again, it's not a fun word.
Right.
I really questioned having that word postpartum on the cover. Uh-huh. And then everybody associates postpartum to postpartum depression.
Right.
There's still an unclear path of what the two are.
Mm-hmm. I love how you just moved postpartum out of the way and said, nourishing the new mother.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And I just wanted to, and somehow the titles, you know, as you know, the titles for me come at the end, mm-hmm. you know, so I just, it just, the first 40 days just came, mm-hmm. you know, just like, it just.
Magic.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of magic.
So was it Amelie that you were saying, let's
yes.
do this together? So how did you convince her?
Oh yeah, it was, so she's, you know, she wrote tons of, she still writes, continued to write for really, really wonderful health practitioners. And she's very experienced in this field. So I asked her 1 year and she just said, no, I don't think it's going to work. And then 2 years later, I approached her again. I said, you know, let's try this. And I had no idea about how to even go into publishing. Right. So I asked her and she said, you know what, I'll just ask my agent who is married to a Chinese woman. And Christina, I think, was just about to give birth. And she is familiar with Zuo Yuezi. So Mark, now my agent, was really familiar with Zuo Yuezi. And I was like, whoa, like what? Like you understand postpartum care in America and the lack of and the bridge between Chinese and
the need for this book that's been gestating.
Yeah, I mean, that really just shocked me. And then he just said, yes, and then let's try it. And one thing led to another. And 4 out of 6 publishers wanted the book.
Wow, Han.
Yeah, and I
that's
sold
amazing.
It. I actually was in my car. Because my reception at my house is really poor. Uh-huh. So I have to like, I have to drive
to get these deals for the
Yeah. Phone. And actually, I can actually concentrate better in my car.
Mm-hmm. So you took the photos, didn't you?
I worked with my friend Jenny. So I would go out to Maine, and that's where she lives. And also, she would come out to LA, and we would shoot pretty much 2 sessions.
Because you're an artist mm-hmm. and a photographer. And so we've talked about this with respect to, and I think it's like planning a healthy meal, right? To know like what colors and the energies of the foods and how it all blends together. And that is the divine feminine, right? To create yeah. something that others will enjoy.
Right.
It's one aspect of divine feminine, at least.
It is. It is. You know, I went to art center, so illustration and graphic design is my background. So there's very much the feel of the food and how the fonts and the text come together on the page. Mm-hmm. And it's always, for me, it goes back to the feeling of, you know, so when I food style with, you know, with my team, it was always how that would be translated, you know, to the reader and to myself, obviously, at the moment, because I'm so present when I'm in the moment of making mm-hmm. the recipes or creating the pages or, you know, doing the shots. So that's my favorite part, you mm-hmm. know,
is the creative. Mm-hmm. Of course. But you also know the energies and the textures and the colors of these foods and how to blend that in. It must have been such a labor of love.
It is. But strangely enough, it's all intuitive for me, mm-hmm. right? Because I have, let's say when we're shooting, I collect all the ingredients and then I would sort of like pick and choose and then put colors and textures and put everything together on the spot.
Right.
But I don't have a real rhyme or reason, or I don't get technical. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's all about the feel of, and again, how it's going to look on screen and how it's going to affect the reader.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you revolutionized the postpartum era, at least here in the West, in this little local community. So to bring the awareness that women lose blood and yin and essence, but they can use food to put it back, and that they need a community to support and nurture. Please elaborate on some of that.
Yeah, it's really seeing the lack of, right? Mm-hmm. And when I started Mother Bees about 12 years ago, you know, at that time, I've always like loved businesses. I've always loved starting something. And at that time, I wanted just to make food for anybody that I knew that was pregnant. So I just asked,
are you pregnant? Can I cook for you? And luckily, pregnant. Can I cook something for you?
I had one friend at school, at my kid's school, that was pregnant, who was about to give birth. And I just asked her, I said, you know, can I just make you some soup and broth?
Yeah, I was just saying, I need to make you some chicken bone soup.
And of course, when you ask that, no one's going to say no. And so I made the food and went to her home and presented it to her and served her and really just heated up the food for her. And just by that simple gesture was everything to her. And I could literally feel everything relax. And she would sit in her kitchen and she would just like reflect. And again, that's that very small window that I saw.
Yeah. I'm just thinking how uptight of a culture we've become. Mm-hmm. I mean, post pandemic, we have more of this desire to connect. But pre-pandemic, I'm having a hard time envisioning people having time for you to come over to serve them food and stuff. We were going too fast.
Yeah.
But you saw, you trusted your intuition, you had a sense, and they were receptive to it.
Yeah.
And so that was the beginning of Mother Bees.
Yeah. Well, that's the good thing about, you know, new moms is that pretty much majority of the time they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So you just mm-hmm. know mm-hmm. that they're going to be home. Mm-hmm. And majority of the time they're by themselves, you know, as being in Los Angeles, it ended up to be sort of sad to see in a way, because in the beginning I would drop off the food and ring the door and, you know,
run.
And sometimes, you know, I would actually hand off the food to the husband or to the mom who would open the door. And once in a while she would ask me to come in mm-hmm. and it's a complete stranger. Mm-hmm. And I would go in and sit with her and again, like, make the food for her and talk to her. And she's there by herself. And I could literally sense a difference of just having a little presence in her space. And again, the loneliness that occurs. And I'm pretty sure that happens quite a bit here in America.
Because it becomes such a confusing time. Like, what feeding schedule for the baby, or am I doing it right, or whatever? And other people just assume you want your space. And so right. then you are there with this new relationship and trying to figure it out. And the couples can be at odds too, because it becomes all about her breast and making yeah. milk or recovering her body after the immediate surgery or after immediately after surgery recovering.
Yeah. And a lot of times she doesn't know what she wants, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's so probably overwhelmed with everything that's going in her happening in her body of that recovery stage. And it's not just one little thing. It's everything added on top of the mysterious hormones. And again, the challenge of breastfeeding. And then how do you even put it into words about what you actually need at that time? So your partner, your husband is just like,
really hands up in the air, mm-hmm. having no idea. You know what really saved me, and I've never talked to you about this, but mm-hmm. With my first pregnancy, I had my placenta prepared. Mm-hmm. Do you encourage your new moms?
Are there? I do.
You do.
I do.
I do too.
I do. I didn't have mine. I guess at that time, I wasn't that aware. I just had it in my freezer, and I just sort of like, I ended up tossing it, and right. I'm so sad I did.
Yeah, my first one was prepared. With Jack, it was tossed. It was an emergency C after a VBAC attempt, and it got chaotic, and so nobody remembered to ask for that or put it aside for me. But in the first pregnancy, having that during the postpartum time, it was very calming. It stopped tears in their tracks. It wow. made me feel stronger. Really? It really was something. So that would be my first 40 days was using those little capsules.
Yeah.
I didn't prepare it myself, but.
You didn't, right. Actually, there's a placenta smoothie in the first 40 days.
Yes, mm-hmm. the recipe. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's about like taking a little piece out and freezing it and putting it into smoothies with blueberry.
Yeah, because it's so concentrated in the nutrients and the good vibes. It's all energy.
Oh, it's so energetic. And I think I did recently see a placenta presentation, and I saw it and I'm like, my God, there's so much glowing from that piece of meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just felt like I wanted to bite into it. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, especially here we are at this time of life and looking for things that will replenish the essence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a fascinating time. And though I would love to talk to you about it more, this is baby makers. Mm-hmm. So we are getting them to that, which means yes. that we need to awaken their fertility.
Yes.
Right? So after you did first 40 days, what was the motivation, or how long was it before you started having the stirrings?
Yes. So I think it was about 2 to 3 years after the book came out in 2016, the first one, my editor came to us and said, you know, would you like to do another one? And I just had to do one on fertility again. It's, again, it goes deep. One of my aunt specializes, well, she now is retired, but she did specialize in acupuncture and fertility, and she was very popular up in Oakland, right? So I was always intrigued by her work.
Were working in her clinic, weren't you?
No, I was just a kid, and I would go up and down the, you know, my two aunts, my uncle had three different offices in one building.
Oh, wow.
So as a kid, and I lived in LA or Maryland, I would go and visit them in Oakland. And every time I would do that, I would just like love going into this old building. It's all crickety and, you know, it's just like nothing's changed. They don't move anything. Like everything stays the same for 30 years, right? So all the objects and motifs, like everything stays the same in their office. But I've always loved it because I would go up and down the stairs and visit each doctor and listen to them and listen and hear the crinkling of the tables, of the paper on the uh-huh, tables, and uh-huh. always hear like the patients like saying, ouch, or ooh, or like something.
Yeah.
And I know they're not, or, and I know their needlework is a little bit harder than normal. Yeah,
or sometimes hearing them cry when yes. they're explaining what's happening or not happening.
Oh, it's a lot mm-hmm. of different a lot of emotions. But I actually really surprised because my aunt's Chinese English is not great, but I've always been impressed on how she was able to communicate, you know, through her needles and through her just her knowing. Mm-hmm. She didn't need to know the details,
right?
Even though she wanted to know some of the lab results and wanted to know some dates and things like that.
Well, it's intuitive, mm-hmm. right? And in Chinese medicine, we can read a face or feel a pulse or look at a tongue or palpate an abdomen, look at an ear.
Oh, I love it.
You can get so much information from what's presenting to us and their body language and their demeanor and how they carry themselves. And if you get a little bit of information on what they're eating, then you can know so much and you can help them so much.
Yeah. And my aunt would also have like jars of urine sitting on her windowsill.
What are you talking about? I don't remember that part.
It's always a thing. Like whenever you visit her office, she would always have like 4 to 5 jars.
Just to see how dark the yellow?
Yeah, or how murky or the color or the texture. And it's everybody's, it's anybody goes.
Oh, right.
And
okay.
Just like, and it's just sitting there.
So she sees it and keeps it?
I guess she keeps it. Not that she keeps it forever. I think she just keeps it for a certain amount of time. I never asked, but it was just the thing that I've always remembered.
As a kid, that must have, as a kid, that would be pretty memorable.
Remember, it's like, I guess this is what you do. But again, there's that, and plus tons of baby photos, right? Again, like she's helped so many couples.
This is. I love making vision boards, and this one just has a handful, a little sprinkling of some of them, but mostly magazine clippings and messages, right?
Yes.
And I used to have these in the treatment rooms to give the women some kind of an idea that they could create something too. And that it's not that hard, but it comes to life and it gives your eyes something to look at, which then tells your brain how to unfold your life and your body, you know?
It's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Visuals and the act of and choosing and, again, it's like
creating,
yes. Mm-hmm. It does bring up the life force.
Right, mm-hmm. for sure. So no vials of urine in my office, but I do appreciate the nuance of our medicine.
Yes.
And it's funny because my kids, they've grown up thinking that when they want to get pregnant or that getting pregnant involves eating a bunch of seeds, crying, hiring a doctor, doing IVF, and getting acupuncture. They associate it with needles, you know, a team, a community, a different kind of community. It's a medical team.
Right. Yeah.
So this is the new culture.
It is. No, I love, you know, I always love hearing your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my story is pretty interesting. It's kind of unfolding a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. So my story was definitely stirring. I had this awareness of Kira Connors is coming to me, which meant, oh, great, that's with my ex-boyfriend who had that last name. And I felt like that was my destiny. And that voice wouldn't go away. That message didn't stop. And definitely, it was louder than a whisper.
Yeah.
But when I got your book, I was interviewed for your book as one of the wise ones, but I love the premise of the stirrings and the whispers and the dreams and paying attention to that. Yeah. And I know you as a Pisces, of course, you're very intuitive and into that, but I loved that you gave the reader permission to open up that part of her brain to think that way.
Oh, it's such a, I think it's the key. You know, I think it's the dream state that gives just your brain and your body more than what you think you know. So it just opens up a gateway of all the possibilities.
Yeah. If you're on a fertility journey, you've likely asked yourself or your doctor, is there something else I can do to make more eggs or better quality eggs or more normal embryos? maybe you just want to feel less anxious in general as you navigate this uncertain time of life. The Seed Fertility Masterclass is a clinically tested IVF intervention that offers a holistic approach to this process. The Masterclass has been empowering women since 2013 and helping women all around the world improve their fertility outcomes. So yes, there is something you can do, and it is possible to feel better. For a limited time, listeners of the Baby Makers podcast will get a 20% discount using the promo code BABYMAKERS at checkout on seedfertility.com. That's SEEDFERTILITY.com. You can take a more active role in the process starting today. Let's talk about awakening fertility, the essential art of preparing for pregnancy. So mm-hmm. preconception care. Mm-hmm. The doulas always were talking about it like that. What made you choose these specific wise ones?
I never, I don't really go with just the traditional and the norm or any sort of rule book, right? Because I just, I sort of like see it and I kind of put it aside. And then I go with what really feels right in how to put a lot of the pieces together. And also, I have a great trust in Emily and Marissa, my co-authors. So the three of us work really well together. We are still fantastic friends. And, you know, Marissa and I are continuing working together and creating more projects with Mother Bee. So we just know the synergy. And that's a synergy. That is like when you meet people, you just have the expansion of, you have the expansive knowing. Mm-hmm. You don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Or where it's going to lead.
Yeah, there's no details besides mm-hmm. knowing there's a lot more of. And I think that's the feeling of fertility, where when you meet somebody, you're just like, whoa, I think there's something here. Or not think, I feel that there's something here that's more than myself.
Yeah.
And more than this person.
Yeah. So you thought, okay, how did you find the wise ones that you aligned with for the book?
Yeah, we were all just searching on our own, you know, in our own ways. And again, we would come in and check in. And again, Emily would go and interview, I have this amazing Ayurvedic doctor, or I have like, you know, historians or teachers or people. People sort of started to come to us mm-hmm. now. Now this is the second book. Mm-hmm. And by this book, we had a lot more options and choices. Mm-hmm. And I remember with meeting you, I just felt like you just were not the you just weren't the linear traditional
That's for
method.
Sure. Right, I know.
And with that, I'm always intrigued.
Then we were aligned.
Yeah, right? We're so aligned, and I'm always intrigued. And I'm like, whoa, you're like this blonde-haired,
blonde-haired Asian.
Asian, you're kind of Asian underneath, but you're kind of not.
I know. I actually have a little bit of Asian DNA.
Oh, you do?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but that's that whole Tibetan previous lifetime thing. For another episode. Yeah. Just, well, it was, as I had this psychic download, it was in 1953. So it's not lingering that long. It was my most recent lifetime for those who are listening that believe in any of that. But it is in my DNA, something Asian.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. So I was really honored to be approached for an interview to be in the book. I didn't know what to expect. Yeah. I know I had very specific ways of doing things with the seed program, and I didn't know how you were going to merge it in with this book, but now I know, and I love what you did. But I'm so honored to be a part of the community of the wise ones.
Oh, absolutely. You're very much cherished, you know, within our hive. That this is the one thing I feel like I'm also good at, is knowing what I'm good at, what I'm also not good at. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a lot of areas that I'm not technical, as you know, I'm not, you know, into the nutritional panels. I'm not into just the linear way of delivering the message. Mm-hmm. So I'm a lot more, again, like, I open the doors to whoever is. Mm-hmm. So I allow that to happen, and mm-hmm. I welcome, mm-hmm. you know, the voices like yourself to come in. Mm-hmm. And then we can all create something bigger for more
people. So the wise ones are like Ayurvedic, another acupuncturist and spiritual psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. Yoga instructor, holistic nutritionist, so many different
modalities, right? Because as you know, it's not just one method.
Right.
If you need that assistance, like, you know, if you need the extra care.
Well, and if you're going to be awakening your fertility, right, which we should talk about that concept in a second. But if you're going to be a facilitator to help somebody awaken their fertility, that's going to look very different for everybody. So to present them with, it's a Ayurveda thing, or make sure that you're stretching and breathing like yoga, and being aware of the cyclical nature of our cycles. So bringing awareness and education and insight, it does kind of introduce them. It's not like, okay, if you're signing up to do IVF, is this the right book for them? Maybe, maybe not, but it's more like for those that are thinking about or something, what would you say? How do you think about this book for which audience?
Yeah, I actually think because I'm really into the prepping phase, right? And I feel like that prepping can actually start when you pretty much get your period.
Right.
That early on. And as we know in the Chinese culture, a lot of young women, right, pubescents, they start to really become conscious about that care because it's the knowing that someday this could happen or most likely will happen.
Yeah. And it's very obvious something has changed in my body.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. So if you take the care to monitor yourself or know that, you know, there's certain aspects, if you're a little bit off, then you go get the herbs or you go get the needlework. Right. So you keep yourself on point. Mm-hmm. And this is decades before conceiving.
I'm needling Kira, and I have for several years.
Great.
And it's interesting because the last guest was endometriosis surgeon Larry Orbuck, who did my third laparoscopy in 2022. Yeah. And Kira, she's my daughter, so she should have endometriosis and severe period pain if we talk about it from the genetic, it's handed down from the mother to the daughter. She doesn't have like a superior diet, but for her first 10 years, I controlled it so much with greens and foods that would help with estrogen dominance. And she was introduced to herbs. She really didn't take any antibiotics. She still likes bitter herbs and Chinese medicine. And she asks me sometimes when I come home from work and I'm so tired, hey, Mom, will you give me some acupuncture? I'm like,
oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's great that she feels that it's something that can knock her back into balance.
Oh, I love it.
So she does not have period pain.
Yeah.
Right. She has a low egg reserve, as I had to find out with an ultrasound and some blood work and stuff. I was just curious and I went checking. And so I have that in the back of my mind, but I'm using herbs where I can and diet as much as she will allow. And
so lucky.
Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, I really do believe, well done for, you know, being so aware, obviously, because this is your line of work.
Yeah.
But also she's so courageous. Just keep on saying yes and believe in you as well, trusting you. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
Really big deal.
Right. I've treated some of her friends and they're a little less receptive to the whole idea because they didn't grow up with it. It's weird. It's a bottle of dirt. Yeah. It's a needle.
It tastes awful. Yeah, I know. Right. I know the taste well.
I took herbs this morning before coming into the studio.
I believe, you know, the needlework. I mean, I don't get any period pains. You know, I used to, but because of the acupuncture, I don't get any pains.
Right. So back to awakening fertility. So what was the tipping point into, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to write about fertility.
Yes. So as I mentioned, you know, with my aunt's history with acupuncture and fertility, and also, you know, over the last decades, I've helped a good handful of friends or people that would just come to me and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about getting pregnant soon. And as soon as somebody comes to me and says that to me, a flood of information just comes to me. And then majority of the time, 2 to 3 months later, it happens.
And so you give them suggestions like?
I would ask questions like pretty much just how their lifestyle is at the very moment.
Okay.
And just, you know, gently navigate that with them.
Mm-hmm. Because that awakening in the preparing stage or starting to think about it looks so different for everybody. It could be triggering. It could be, awaken some traumas that need to be moved through. And it's, I have learned that consciousness comes through, or it's something where we become more self-aware. It's the personal discovery time for me that would be preparing, you know?
Absolutely. And also they're moving through loss because they might have had a few loss and miscarriages.
Or lost relationships. Things didn't work out the way they thought that it would. Something like that.
Yeah. So it's a very powerful time when the whispers start to, you know, build to a full-on yes.
Mm-hmm. I call it restoring their fertile confidence. So whispers are kind of at the beginning, but then if those whispers don't turn into a positive pregnancy test, then their fertile confidence starts to wane.
That is true.
Then I come in to help bring it back and give them different things that, you know, the spirit of a mother and stuff. So as I opened the book, I opened to the felt sense of motherhood. One of these terms.
It is.
So as the whispers, since that's kind of in the beginning, the whispers lead to.
Yeah. And I believe that this whisper can happen, you know, as your child, if, you know, as a child. It can come to you much earlier in life, but you might not recognize it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Kira has already had the whisper she's going to have 2 twin boys they're mixed race.
No way.
That's what she said.
Yeah.
Who knows?
And also it's a knowing of nurturing, right? Yeah. Like nurturing, you just know you want to nurture another human being.
Right. Or pets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This does show up with girls with dolls and things. Yeah. So like that... the care for animals.
Right.
It's another way it shows up.
Yes. Yeah. And then what we like to do is turn it within, inwards, right? So she starts to nurture herself earlier on in life and start to look at, again, the cycle and, you know, just her body reaction to her monthly cycle. And I think this is why we're gifted with the monthly cycle, because we get to look at ourselves every single month in this way, and and it can get pretty intense,
right? Or it can go away. A lot of girls right now, they're not even having periods.
Gosh,
you know, it's that's a tricky thing. That's where herbs and nurturing really need to be brought in instead of sending them to the MD for birth control pill to mechanically trigger the period. How about looking at the root? What's wrong? What's not in the diet that your body needs to be able to successfully ovulate?
Yeah.
Or what's the source of stress that's causing the hypothalamus to halt ovulation?
You know,
these are the things. It's where we are right now as a society, looking at the phones, putting too much light into their eyes, scrolling constantly. The images that they're seeing is another thing that could be so overstimulating for them.
Yeah, it's more to disconnect, right?
Yeah.
More to disconnect from yourself and more to disconnect to your womb. You know, I think just a general sense of knowing that we have a womb space and ovaries and, you know, fallopian tubes. I mean, early on in life, like in the 4th or 5th grade, I've always drawn images weirdly. I've always loved that reproductive.
We had that in common. When I was 10 and 11 years old, I was obsessed. I had bathroom vanity full of Stay Free mini pads I asked my mom to buy, like as if I was going to be bleeding that much, that heavily, that early on. It was just something. doing something obsessive about it. And I didn't get a period until 3 years later, after I had thrown all of it in the trash and figured that God forgot to give me a uterus.
Oh,
I had to detach from it. I had to surrender it and just think, okay, I guess that's for other people.
Oh, wow.
I'm not going to get a period because it's just not coming, not coming, not coming. And that has been a theme for me in life with respect to relationships, and their fertility was a thing. Oh. All of my friends were pregnant first, and I just figured there wasn't any chance for me to get pregnant.
Wow.
Like, it's a theme, and that those themes, looking for those themes, are themes that I find in the patients that I present to them for them to think through so that they can start processing.
Wow. So are you sort of like unconsciously attracting these patients that are...
Who's interviewing you here? Well, it must not be that unconscious or subconscious, because I'm aware of it. Mm-hmm. But you know how we find and heal these things are in safe conversations, right? Or some time to think it through. But but yeah, there's these themes need to be presented, to be honored, and then released.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I really also believe in the divine timing, right? The right people, the right partner, the right everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happens, it's it could flow really well too.
Right. But the preparation too. Mm-hmm. I really think that the things worth having are the things that we've prepared for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the divine timing, and then just have so much more from it.
And I think though, with like the Chinese culinary, you know, we always talk about the, you know, feeding the body, right? Feeding the energy, feeding the vitality. And it comes to the point of like, you know, because knowing that there's loss every month, the period, and also knowing that you're going to conceive one day, you're always building your reserves.
Or preventing too much of a loss of the essence, right?
Right. So that's the preparation that I was really excited about to put into this book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just knowing that. Again, like, I'm not really, I don't know, like, it just feels bad when someone says, like, I want to get pregnant soon, but then they have, like, give themselves, like, 3 months or so to prepare.
Yeah.
Right. I feel like there's a lot of missing time that you could be building more of.
Mm-hmm. Right. This culture is about career first, right? That's the egg freezing is the thing that we talked about earlier today with another guest. This would be good before doing egg freezing to read Awakening Fertility and to be thinking as another layer of why they want to put some eggs in the freezer.
Yeah.
And to know what they are putting into their eggs with their consciousness.
Right. You know, my aunt had always said, you know, let's look at your partner too. Let's always look at, let's not just focus on you.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your husband in, you know, let's have him, you know, get some needlework, get some herbs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's ask him some questions.
In Awakening Fertility, do you talk about the male partner?
Yes. Yeah.
How so?
Well, we touch on it lightly. You know, it's we talk about it because I don't like the idea of knowing that is just only solely the woman's responsibility.
Yeah, because it isn't.
It isn't, right? But our society makes it believe it is. And everything wrong about reproduction is always the woman's issue, because there's a lot of money to be made on the woman's, right? Like reproductive areas.
Because we have a uterus, we want to use it.
We want to use it and we care so much about it. And again, we have our monthly cycle. So there's a lot that goes into this, our body, even though we might not choose to, but we have to because we bleed every month, right? So
we're regularly reminded that we could or should be creating life.
And sometimes if you're not looking at it, then you are sort of like, you're in pain, right? You get your cramps.
It can.
You really,
yes. And the longing for a child, if it's not happening for you, will actually cause some pain in the chest.
Right.
A heaviness too, the grief.
Right.
The loss of the dream of it happening easily.
Yeah. Yeah. My friend who is in, she's, oh my goodness, from Indonesia. But she says that the period is, you know, the kind of like the tears coming down every month because there's no baby that was,
Yeah,
that was formed.
The uterus is a second heart. And so the menstrual fluid is the release of that.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? It really feels like a massive release of like, oh, finally, it's here. And I could just, you know, just the tension just gets released. And again, it's such a massive gift that we get to receive every single month. If we seriously get to, if we look at it
like that, I was thinking, that's a good reframe.
Yeah, it is. So
for women that want to have that child palace full with a baby inside, to see the period is not a joyous moment or a cleansing. It's more of a reminder of something that they want their body to do and it's not doing.
Right.
So, you know, I teach in the seed program that in that phase one, those days of bleeding, that it is an important cleansing time. And once we cleanse and we release, we do make space to integrate new information.
That's good.
That's the best way to look at it if you find yourself in that predicament, as far as I've seen. Makes sense. That's when I like to see them during their period to help them find some new information so that then they can be set up on their next cycle with a good plan. How are we going to do this ovulation and this cycle attempt differently? Because I like to tell them if we can change things on the front end, then we can change the outcome.
Right. That makes sense. So this is why I like to bring in the husband or the partner in fairly early.
Exactly. Yeah. Get him on board. So I'm opening the book to the felt sense of motherhood. What does that feel like, would you say?
What I could reflect back with my own fertility is that it was crystal clear to me. There's no doubt, even though the words and the sentence of the commitment of the words, like, I want to make a baby with you. I didn't say it like that, but I just knew that this person who I ended up having three babies with. And it came to us so easily that I think that was our purpose, right? So it was a very small amount of time that we were together, but yet we made three amazing humans on the dot, like
effortlessly.
Effortlessly. Everybody was born after 10:30 at night. You know, everybody was, you know, they're about two to three years apart, you know, and they're very good friends or they're very good siblings. And so I think by seeing that and knowing that, I just really believe in that because I've always followed that insight within myself.
I ask my patients if it's on the intake form when they're coming in as a new patient, can you see yourself becoming a mother? And 99% of the time they say yes. And I'm relieved. It's the ones that can't see it. Then I know that going in so that I'm not six sessions in and then finding this out. I want to know at the beginning and then see if I can help them to experience that felt sense.
Yeah, it's good to know. And also you get to see if it's in the mental side or if it's the felt sense in the body side. And I think I've always lived in my body more than my mental.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the mental is just limited and my body is just so much more information in it.
Right. So the mental might be like, I want to have a baby that's born in the year of the dragon or a certain astrological sign, or this would make sense based on, I work with a lot of different people in the industry. So this is when they're on a downtime from a filming or something. And so they want to get past the morning sickness phase, or they want to do the film before they start showing, stuff like that. Wow. They want to try to schedule it in.
Does that normally work for them?
Well,
it's a lot of little windows.
Sometimes, but you know, it's a matter of this whole idea of manifesting and visualizing and then having the felt sense. The knowing, and then they can sync up and align. It's like having the emotion, seeing the vision, and that elusive sort of, or not elusive, but nuanced thing. So if we can create that, then they will manifest that how they want it to go.
Yeah. I mean, I probably just was not savvy enough back then, but also I was in a way but I was it was a long time ago.
Well, you were allowing. 20. You were just allowing them to come in the season that they were supposed to, so that then you could gestate three books.
Yeah, for sure. The only one that we planned a little bit was my son, because we had two girls and we wanted a boy. And I went to my aunt. We both went to my aunt and asked her, how do you do this?
Okay.
And she gave us some tips.
Okay. Can you share?
Wait, just like, I remember like just going up to Oakland and sitting in her kitchen in Piedmont. And she just said, go get a lot of oysters in her, you know, in her mannerism. And somehow we just like went, I don't know, for a drive 45 minutes away from Piedmont, and we found a bag of oysters. We brought it back to the kitchen, start chowing down. Again, it was such intuitive feel, like we're just like, okay, we must do. Right?
I ate a bunch of steamer clams the night that Kira was conceived.
So it was,
it was
like,
this, I need the,
you needed the colon. Yeah, you needed it. That's right. So like, so we just like, we ate so many oysters that day. And I remember, and I don't think I knew exactly when I was ovulating, but I, again, I had a sense because I didn't use any trackers. I didn't use any. I'd never taken my temperature, right? You just like, again, just like a little.
Well, I had tracked for about 3 to 4 years, the handwriting and the charting. There were no apps back in the olden days.
Right.
When I was cracking the code on my fertility, but I had done that so many times, and I had endometriosis, so I had middle Schmerz, mid-cycle pain. I knew my body sent all kinds of cues to make sure. That would be like loud Kira's egg. Hey, don't forget. Remember this feeling.
Yes.
And it happened with Jack, too. I had that feeling, and the opportunity presented itself.
Yeah. You know, again, like hearing all the little details, following the crumbs, and going with it, you know, not overthinking it.
I think I want to mention that the flip of the felt sense of motherhood would be the sense of despondency, where there's a hyper focus on how it isn't there yet. And if it's not there, then I can't be happy. And how that creates a vacuum or a vacuous sense, the opposite.
It
is
the true.
Knowing, and that is a pothole that women may fall into. So I hope that they're hearing this and thinking outside of the box or beyond the feeling of the grief, to be opening the body part of the brain. What did you call, is that what you called it? You said like the logical part of the mind and then the body part?
Yeah, the body sense, the sense
the body sense, that to allow that feeling to get stronger than the self-doubts.
Yes. Absolutely, because I feel like the self-doubt and also the fears and the scarcity feel is small. It might feel massive and overwhelming and stressful, but if you look at the bigger scheme of things, I feel like it's like a key towards something bigger. So when you feel that sense of loss or fear or of like not having, it's like, okay, it's coming in. It's coming. It's, I feel it now. But yet, wow, there's an opportunity here for something more.
Yeah.
And that is just an exchange.
Right. You have a section in here about healing old hurts. That's really important.
Yeah, we like to clear a lot. Hopefully we like to, you know, clear and prep. So it's all about like clearing the, you know, the old hurts, anything that's obviously, you know, you're not going to be, it's not, not, I don't predict people to do this within like a couple weeks, but it's a, again, it's an invitation to start looking at something.
It's just
the sooner you do it, the
loving suggestion.
Yeah, it's a loving suggestion. Like it's going to come through some
point. It's not as easy as going and buying a bag of oysters.
No, it's not.
Healing old hurts.
No,
like
no.
Making a conscious decision to try to feel better in your heart about something that was out of your control in the past.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a lifeline. It's a life work. Right. You know, and when you have children, it's it also, you know, they're presenting new set of invitations out to you as well.
Yeah. It's not the happy ending that we may be presented that
it's just the beginning.
Yeah, it's the beginning of new hurts.
Right.
Nourishment and avoiding depletion and replenishing what's been lost.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So it might be kind of hard because it's hard to tell what you're at loss of, right? Mm-hmm. In your body. And it's hard to tell what you're depleted of, mm-hmm. I think, for most citizens or humans.
Yeah.
Right?
Most people don't really have any clue.
No idea. It's like, I feel kind of sluggish. I feel tired. I'm just going to go and get some more coffee.
Right. I'm coffee deprived.
And then it starts to kind of roll into other issues.
Upregulated.
Right. And then your adrenals are shot and it's like keeps on going and going. Mm-hmm. And then, but I feel like it could be fairly simplified.
Right? Give us some ideas, please.
Well, I'm into just resting as much as you can. Like mm-hmm. rest when you feel like you need a rest. Mm-hmm. Don't go and, don't push it. And also don't cover it up by, indulging in sugars or caffeine. Yeah. Or cookies or anything like that, because those are quick crashes. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big, I love transitions and I love resets. However way I want to do a reset throughout the day, I could just do that. If I want to just take a nap, I'll mm-hmm. just like roll through.
Sometimes just at 1 o'clock, it seems to be the time for me where I need like even just 5 to 10 minutes of just shutting off the inputs, because right. I get asked so many questions from so many different angles. And if I don't give myself that time, I feel ill.
Yeah, right.
But if I give myself that, then I'm refreshed and I can make it through, pick up the kids, see a few more afternoon patients and different, it just affords me so much. It really doesn't take a whole lot to put a little bit back in the tank. We moms and women can do a lot with a little.
Yeah, no, it's true.
I love what you said in the book where you made the idea of keeping the healthy foods as the staples in the home mm-hmm, mm-hmm. so that it's so much easier mm-hmm. to whip something up that's healthy yeah. if it's already there.
Yeah. I talk about that a lot yeah. in terms of being a parent or a mom or just, person with a fridge.
Somebody yeah. who wants to start preparing her body for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So name a couple good staples that we should have.
Yeah. So I love the healthy fats. And I also, of course, believe that whoever's buying the groceries is the controller, obviously, of your own diet, which right. makes total sense. Mm-hmm. So if you're at the grocery store putting, random things that you just know you just don't really need to have, I would sort of like think about that again.
Right.
I think it's always about the 9, like if you rate from like 1 to 10, you always go for like the 9 and the 10s.
In what respect?
Like
healthy?
We all know what healthy is.
Yeah.
We all know. And we yeah. also know what I'll just take this because I might need it one day because I'm going to deserve a cookie uh-huh. or, it goes back to the childhood stage of like, you get a cookie because you did something great.
Yeah.
So it's emotional eating too.
Right. Yes.
So then you
emotional
start to
eating and tired eating.
Right. So those are the items that are not going to help. But they might help you sort of like in the moment of. Mm-hmm. So again, whatever you bring into your front door is what you're going to be going to when you're emotionally down or feeling tired.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of some of your Instagram posts, mm-hmm. right? Your reels. And it's the pot and there's something boiling and then you make it seem so easy.
Yeah.
And I guess that's partially because you have all the staples on hand, but it's also that's just second nature to you. Yeah. All the cooking that you've done for so many, and you know what blends well together and how long it takes. What's some advice for people that don't really like to cook?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I didn't like to cook until I got into college. I didn't
that's
have
a strange time to start learning,
my gosh.
Right?
I didn't have an inkling. I didn't have a feel for food. Until I literally felt like I tell the story quite a bit is that my grandmother passed a couple of years before I started college, but I literally felt like she came into me and just said, you must need to cook. Like you have to learn how to cook.
Uh-huh.
And I just, all of a sudden I woke up to the senses of food.
Uh-huh.
Cause right, like a minute right before that happened, I didn't care.
No, you were a high school teenage girl.
Yeah. And I was like immigrant Chinese who grew up in Ohio. So that there was a lot of disconnect there.
Yeah, right.
So I wanted to be American, but I was not cause I was like fully Chinese. So I left a lot of the cooking and the food to my family. And I just didn't have a relationship to it again until I got into college. And then I start to like sense it and feel it and know it. And just everything came together really nicely. And it is true. It does feel like it's effortless. I feel like I can go into anybody's fridge and make something really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I'm always in a place of non-judgment of, you know, like, this is what it is. And mm-hmm. let's work with what you have. Mm-hmm. And you can always make something beautiful and healthy, mm-hmm. you know, from anybody's fridge.
Yeah. Wow.
But then once I know that, then I can maybe bring in my,
bring some magic more. Sauce. Yeah, right. I mean, your reels are incredible with the the jujubes. That reminds me. So Mother Bees has their own jujube date on the market.
Yeah.
That's delicious.
Yeah. Yes.
Tell us more about jujube dates.
Yeah. So again, it's one of those like prized possessions that I've always known about as a kid. Because I was a jujube, you know, one aunt would always have a jujube plant, and my grandmother would always like peel it and put it into her broths and with goji berries, a little bit of that, and always talk to the food and say, this is for my eyes, this is for you know, organs. Or she would always like, and I would always remember that mm-hmm. knowing of like, wow, she just put an ingredient in, she's talking to her own self of what she wants healed.
That's amazing.
And again, it's so simple, but yet. Mm-hmm. That's what I understood mm-hmm. to what the healing properties of food is. Mm-hmm. And then I start looking into jujubes and just the history of.
Like?
Well, the prized possession of like the jujube is like the fruit that you would drink or eat after you give birth. So it's like associated to postpartum mm-hmm. or rejuvenating any sort of like blood loss or circulation, or it's got great vitamin C and it helps with immune, and it's like the go-to, like kind of like pork trotters, right? You're supposed to eat that after you give birth.
What is it?
Pork feet. Oh, like pickled pork feet.
Oh,
with okay. with
I'm being too American.
Lots of ginger and brown sugar. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's really gelatinous. It's so good.
So nourishing.
And it's supposed to help with breast milk. So as soon as a mom would give birth, a lot of Chinese homes would make the pickled feet stew.
Wow.
Yeah, it's so good.
Wow.
And then that plus the jujube is always part of the ingredient list of what you would make.
I bet if you made it, I would love it. But if I tried to make it, I would just get too freaked out.
I was actually surprised. Yeah, no, thanks for your honesty. I was actually surprised. There was actually a lot more people that made that recipe because that recipe is in the first 40 days. And mm-hmm. I was surprised that there's a lot of people that actually made it
and mm-hmm. wrote you to say how much they benefited from it.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. when you eat pork and when you eat the fats, like you actually feel the warmth from your cheeks. Mm-hmm. So when you know that, when you feel that, you feel like you just know, like, you know, things are working within your body. Mm-hmm. You know, you just know circulation is just getting stirred up. And mm-hmm. that, again, helps with breast milk. Mm-hmm. It helps with the flow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something about pork fat that's good for the adrenals. And it's a salty flavor in Chinese medicine that goes to the kidneys.
Yeah.
And the adrenals are on top of the kidneys. So I think a little, like with my kids, if they get too depleted, I will get them little bits of bacon.
Yeah.
Use that.
I think it also calms the nerves too.
For sure.
It's grounding. Mm-hmm. It's calming. Again, you don't need that much.
Right.
But it just like...
Whew, it's just food like as melts. Medicine, mm-hmm. right? The dense fat and all of that. So the Mother Bee's dates, that's what I was mm-hmm. asking you about. Mm-hmm. Those dates, you use them in preconception care, postpartum, and during pregnancy because of this... chi tonic ability that they have. They also, when mixed with a little bit of licorice and blighted wheat, then it's a formulation that stops organ dryness and stops weepiness and crying.
Oh, I love that.
So I also lean heavy to the jujube.
Right. And also it's good for menstrual.
Putting back, mm-hmm. And helping with cramping.
Yeah, it helps with sleep too. You mm-hmm. know, I know the Korean cultures, like they pretty much drink it every single night mm-hmm. to help them relax after a long day.
Yeah.
So take a little tonic, And again, helps with their immunity. Like they believe it helps with their immunity, so they would drink quite a bit of that.
Do we know what nutrient it is? We agreed I wouldn't quiz you on nutrient panels, but do we know what nutrient it is?
Well, I know it's really high in vitamin C.
Okay.
I just know that. I know, again, that's why it's related to like immune health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's got so much fiber, and the red, it's a blood tonic.
Right.
So yes. That's mm-hmm. the thing. In your book, you were kind enough to put that page in here, Feeding Your Cycle, about the seed program.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I do get patients yes. that come in, they have read your book and they found me through you. So
right.
I was glad that you saw the value to the seed program and put this information in about the cycle and the foods to eat during right. the cycle. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's everything, right? I think it's like, if we don't use an example of how and what we're feeding our cycle, then, you know, again, the ramp of like, all of a sudden I want to conceive, mm-hmm. it's just going to be
asking a lot of the body.
It's asking a lot. It is. It's kind of like, you're just kind of like, just like, you know, wringing the water out of this dry well. And again, I love to do it like decades before, and you're building and you're, you know, rejuvenating and you're, you know, you're losing every month, but yet you're in a better state mm-hmm. because we obviously love the reserves and, you know, and building your chi and your energy force.
Well, and if you're using food at the right points of the cycle that can support the hormones,
right.
then it's less of a draw from yeah. your essence and your
absolutely.
Body. It yeah. just, it's like, oh, it's coming, it's financed through the food.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's might be a little bit more taxing on, you know, women that might be on a vegan diet or just like a pure plant-based diet. Mm-hmm.
I do think mm-hmm. that there are important nutrients missing mm-hmm. for egg quality. Mm. And there was a patient Dr. Beck and I worked with who had, been too stringent with her diet, and she just became very frail, and she was older, and she did IVF, and her eggs did disintegrate in the petri dish. And so we had to take 6 months to really fortify her body with different nutrients and different foods, animal foods, herbs, protein powder, all kinds of different things. And we were able to recover. And we're not saying that everybody who's vegan or vegetarian is going to have to hang it up and won't be able to have any kids.
Right.
But everybody is different and they can get depleted. So
Yeah. And it depends on everybody's constitution, right? Mm-hmm. Family history. There's so much to be considered. Mm-hmm. And as we know, there's a lot of vegans who do get pregnant without a problem.
Yeah,
so yeah,
of course.
There's so many different parts to look at.
Right. We're mostly talking if you're having a problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then it might be important to put some food in as fertile medicine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some animal food. Stress as the enemy.
Yes. And stress, the mysterious stress.
Mm-hmm.
I know, stress that like snowballs into.
Right. So back, it's like piggybacking on this idea, you can be vegan and maybe not have such a stressful life, but if you depend on your adrenal glands and mm-hmm. have a stressful job, then you've got to fortify yourself with nutrient-dense food.
Yeah. I mean, this is my big question, I guess. It's like, you know, because we are so inundated with all this information and we know a lot of this, like, let's say, like, we know, like, eat your broccoli, eat your, you know, greens, and yet some don't.
Most don't.
Most
of us don't want to put the extra energy into cooking.
Right. Right. Even though, you know, it's going to be
great. It actually will give you back energy,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, like, instead of drawing on credit cards, you start to have a little extra.
Right. Going in for credit cards and for loans. Yeah.
The more we take care, the more we put in, the more effortless it can be.
Yeah.
Right. Isn't that really what it's all about?
I think so. I think so. Yeah. Because there's so much more to come.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the less that you're putting a big tight hold around mm-hmm. something at this phase of life, then you're letting a lot of it go. to what the possibilities are. And sometimes the timing just is not right.
And sometimes it's not in the cards.
Sometimes it's not in the cards.
You hear the whisperings, but then how did you address that? Did you address that in the book?
Yes. Yeah. I love my fertility journey so much. And I love my births and my pregnancies because I felt like as a child, I've always known that it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I always had a alignment to it. Mm-hmm. And again, looking back, it's like, wow, my story was easy. Your story is a different story because that's obviously led you to the work that you're in.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. But yet I also want to celebrate the story that I came with as well and not feel bad and guilty because it was right. So easy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the angle that's why our work is so complementary and mm-hmm. why we understand each other so well, because at the core, yeah. there was the felt sense of motherhood.
Right. That is the alignment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is true.
And we use different paths to get there.
Absolutely.
Your third book, mm-hmm. 9 Golden Months, The Essential Art of Nurturing the Mother-to-Be.
Yes.
So please give me the backstory on creating this one.
Yeah, that one was created over the pandemic. So that was a little bit more of a challenge.
How so?
Actually, Awakening Fertility came out right when COVID was announced.
Uh-huh.
So that was, right. had its own challenge on its own, but then we were given the opportunity to write a third book and, you know, wanted to sort of like close off the trilogy with the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, pregnancy is such a treasured moment in yeah. my own experience. And also I just know like it's part of the storytelling. It's part of the, you know, sharing the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So again, it's like continuing the fortification, continuing on everything that you learn about your conscious fertility.
And depending on how you flow through your preconception can inform how your pregnancy goes, and yeah. how you eat and care for your body and flow through pregnancy will inform your first 40 days and your postpartum Absolutely. And your mothering experience.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's like when people ask me the question, like, when do you start? I always go like, you know, yeah, postpartum, but postpartum is at the end.
Right.
And then it's like fertility, and then pregnancy. Oh, no, pregnancy is just, you know, I'm like, no, no. Right. And then it's conception. No, no, no. And then it's like way back.
Yeah.
You gotta, to, again, like when you start your period.
Right. The puberty age.
Puberty
and,
age.
And little girl stage, like you being young Han in your auntie's
yeah.
clinic.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was yeah. the starting point.
It was.
I love that image. As we wrap up, what would you want the listeners to take away?
Yeah, I really believe that everybody has their own unique story and to trust their own path. And not everybody's path is your path.
Mm-hmm. Right. Trust mm-hmm. your own. Trust that you are on a path that's going to lead
that
you
on your own path.
You're going to be happy. And if you right. set that intention, the chance of getting there is right. that much more, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Han, you are brilliant and such a full heart and source of information for this community. I am so grateful that you spent the time here with me today.
Oh, my pleasure. Always. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Well, we'll keep the conversation going.
Yes. Sounds good.
Thanks for joining me this week on the Baby Makers Podcast. If you love this podcast, please share with others going through fertility. Then follow along on Instagram at babymakers_podcast, where you can share your favorite takeaways and continue the conversation. Be sure to subscribe where you listen to podcasts. And note, this podcast is for educational purposes only. Though there are doctors speaking on the episodes, fertility treatment is completely individualized. Any changes you're considering should be discussed first with your fertility provider.